Tales of the Left Hand, Book 3, written and read by John Maher. The story so far. Tesca and the Blessed have learned that it is Kelisandra's daughter Molly who is responsible for healing them. Having escaped the barn with her, they must decide their next move. Chapter 37. Liam had led the refugees within sight of the copse where the wagon had been hidden when Sister Jaina turned around to look back at the abbey and made a cry of despair.
Smoke! The abbey is afire!
This brought the entire column to a halt. Liam and Yvette both came running back to join Tesca and Hollem at the rear.
I think it's near the front gate, Tesca said, squinting.
Are you sure? Brother Hollem asked. I can see the smoke, but no greater detail than that.
I'm sure. Could the fire spread to the rest of the abbey?
Not easily, the monk replied. If the fire is near the front gate, it might spread to the other buildings near it, but there's a good deal of space between them and the middle gate, so the fire should be contained, unless Kelisandra is trying to burn the abbey down.
Not likely, Liam said. The commander's not one to burn down a fortress if she can take it.
She wants to hold the abbey, Hollem asked. Why?
At a guess, I would say that she is planning for the future, Yvette said. Like as not, more pilgrims will come here, and Count Valion cannot ignore that forever, especially if she keeps sending out foragers to take food from local farms. She would want those walls on her side if he responds in force.
Liam nodded in agreement.
Wagon's not far off. Let's get into the trees.
Brother Hollem took one more look at the twisting pillar of smoke before turning his horse. If the smoke doesn't get any larger, Tesca offered, then it's probably not spreading. Maybe it's just a bonfire on open ground. This gave the monk no comfort.
If Kelisandra wishes to take the abbey for herself, then the only thing she would countenance burning are the books. And they are as much the foundation of the abbey as the bricks. He sighed. The registry is next to the gate. Kelisandra would surely seize the weapons of our guests, but the logbooks would be of little use to her.
Tesca had a flicker of memory at the mention of the registry, recalling a long table and his father writing their names in a book. He wondered if that book was part of the fire, another trace of his father gone. The column reached the cluster of trees and moved into it. The wagon took no trouble to find. Angus and his men had felled a few small trees to make room for it in the center of the grove, then laid branches over it to hide it from distant observation. Liam stayed on the edge of the grove, looking back toward the abbey, while Barza took charge of readying the wagon and harnessing two of the horses to it. Tesca and Yvette climbed into the back of the wagon and took Molly from Hollem. Tesca could feel the power radiating off of the young woman, his skin prickling where it touched hers, and he quickly stepped away the moment he had set her down in the wagon, drawing a curious look from Yvette.
"How is she?" Hollem called from the horse.
"She's fine," Yvette reported a moment later. "The bruise where anger struck her is nearly gone."
Hollem and Tesca shared a look as Yvette continued to examine the girl.
"She heals herself, even when unconscious?"
Hollem asked. Tesca only shrugged, having no answer. He helped Drian and Gwynin climb into the wagon while Hollem dismounted and walked to the western edge of the grove, very nearly the opposite direction from the abbey. As Tesca watched, the monk then held out his arm directly in front of him. Sighting down the length of his arm with his thumb, he then turned several degrees to the right and did it again.
"What is he doing, do you think?" Yvette asked, coming alongside Tesca.
"Getting his bearings?" offered Tesca. "Perhaps he hasn't been out here in a while. You're sure Molly's all right?"
"She certainly seems to be," replied his Hisveshian counterpart. "Her breathing is steady, her color is good. If I didn't know any better, I'd say she was asleep."
"Maybe she is," Tesca remarked. "She did say how tired she was after healing Oswald."
"Hmm," Yvette replied, watching Hollem. "He's looking for something," she decided after a moment, "or he's trying to remember where something is."
"It's probably the trail that Angus used to bring the wagon up here. You should ask Hollem about it while you're on the wagon." She nodded, then blinked,
That sounds as if you're not coming with us.
I'm not.
Oh, and I'm just getting carted off to safety, am I?
She smacked him in the stomach with the back of her hand.
Sometimes I think you've forgotten we're not actually married.
Tesca gave her a wry look. Yvette, there's no reason for you to stay here. Go back to your grandfather. Tell him everything that's going on here. But I have to stay. I still have business on the other side of that wall.
And I wouldn't be doing my job if I didn't find out what that business is, she said with a smile. You're not trying to get into the Abbey just to be reunited with your friend, and you're not chasing after a pirate's treasure either. So, it's something else, and it's my decision when I have all the information Grand-Père will want to know. Besides, I have my doubts you'll survive on your own.
Right, because I, how did you put it, parade around in the open with some ridiculous Sabrian blaze?
Something like that, Yvette said with a laugh, taking his arm and bumping her head against his shoulder. Hollem is returning. I wonder if he found what he was looking for.
Hollem looked at the wagon and the group of refugees around it.
It looks as if we are ready to go. Have we decided exactly where that will be?
My poor, said Tesca. Things are already out of hand, but someone has to step in before things get worse. Barza and the other blessed looked relieved, but Hollem and the other monks were horrified.
Count Valion has no authority here, Hollem objected.
He has soldiers, Tesca replied, and I'm sure he'd prefer the abbot remain his neighbor than have to dig Kalisandra out of the abbey by force. Seeing that this had not quelled Hollem's disquiet, he shifted tactics. Why don't you go to the cathedral first? Make an appeal to Bishop Larea. Explain what's happening here.
That's a very good idea, Yvette agreed. Larea serves the daughter. That makes her relatively neutral in this conflict.
I don't know who outranks whom in the triad hierarchy, Tesca went on, but a bishop should have enough authority to give Kalisandra pause. He looked up to see Liam join them, looking troubled. What is it?
You've the sharp eyes, the acolyte said. Like as not, you'll see it better than me.
He gestured back toward the abbey.
Seems to me the commander knows we've left the barn.
Tesca moved through the crowd, following Liam back to the edge of the trees, Hollem and Yvette a step behind. There were several figures across the open field, moving around the barn. Tesca recognized the acolyte Timon, along with over a half dozen of the healthier pilgrims, who were carrying a mismatched collection of weapons between them. He recognized the curve of a Sabrian argument in the hand of one, and the red and gold ribbon of Kohain fluttering from the pommel of another man's sword.
They've taken the guests' weapons, all right, he said to Hollem. I see Grievous's and Careless Blades out there, and two of them have crossbows.
He noticed movement at the top of the gatehouse.
And there's the commander herself. Looks like there's a pilgrim up there with her, and...
He paused, squinting.
They've got more crossbows up there, and a telescope? Where did they get those? He asked.
Stored in the gatehouse they were, Liam answered, a half second before Hollem could.
How did you know about them? The monk demanded.
Liam shrugged.
Standing orders from the commander. First day we arrive anywhere, we're to learn how the place is prepared for a siege. Saw the crossbows and spyglasses myself, I did, when I went into the gatehouse and started asking questions.
Whether she has to defend a place or capture it, Tesca said, she wants to be prepared. He shrugged at Hollem's shocked expression. Before I enter a building, brother, I count the obvious exits and start looking for the hidden ones. Little different than what the acolytes do, I suppose.
In any case, Yvette said, having lookouts on the gatehouse means that if they didn't see us enter this grove, we'll be spotted the moment we leave. And this grove is the one closest to the camp. It won't take them long to guess where we've gone.
She sighed.
At least we're well out of range of their crossbows, and with the wagon and horses, we have the advantage of speed.
They're between us and the road if we head straight for it, Tesca pointed out. But there's that smaller trail that circles around the plateau. He looked at Liam. Do you know where that is?
Aye, the acolyte replied, but so does she. Trail loops round to join the main road, but it's a big loop. Plenty of time for her to send men down to the other end of it to cut us off.
Brother Hallam stirred. "Do you have any suggestions, brother?" Teska asked. "Your brethren know this area better than anyone. Is there another route we can take?" Hallam took a moment before answering.
"Yes, although it does not lead to Maipur."
He turned to look at the others.
"I must have your oaths that you will not share what I tell you with anyone."
Liam looked suspicious.
"Already broke my oath, not an hour past. Stood ready to kill a man I respected no less than my own father," he growled. "Why would you put any stock in my word?"
"Because, my friend, when you broke your oath, it was to protect us," Hallam replied calmly. "Now I ask you to swear an oath to do the same."
Liam stared at him for a long moment before giving a hesitant nod.
"By the Triad and the fate of my eternal soul, I so swear."
Hallam looked at Teska and Yvette.
"By my life, my honor, and my duty to my master, I swear," Teska said in Sabrian, repeating the phrase in free speak a moment later.
Yvette gave him a curious look, but nodded. "By the Triad and the fate of my eternal soul, I so swear."
Hallam smiled.
"Very well. The route I suggest leads not to Maipur, but into the abbey itself. There is an underground river beneath this plateau, which we have harnessed to supply the abbey and the fields around it with fresh water. The river has carved numerous tunnels beneath us, a network of caves that have been thoroughly explored by my brethren centuries ago. All tunnels that lead below the abbey walls or open onto the plateau somewhere have been sealed, except in two places."
"So, one way in and one way out," Teska said, "but only for those who know their way through the maze."
"Precisely. I can guide us through the caves, but there is one final problem. The tunnel that runs below the abbey walls is protected by a gate, and I do not have the key."
Teska rolled his eyes.
"It's never easy."
Yvette sighed and patted his arm. "Oh, husband, a left hand should have more ways to open a locked gate than hack at it with a sword."
Reaching into her tunic, she drew out a slender leather packet and unfolded it, revealing a set of thin metal tools.
"Unlike you, I did not need to be fished from the sea and then rescued from a cage. I still have a number of my toys with me."
Teska gave her a wry smile, looking at the picks.
"Why didn't you tell me you had those?"
"A few secrets keep a marriage interesting," she said with a wink, "but it's not as if we'd come across a locked door or strongbox before now, is it?"
Hallam looked amused.
"We must put our trust in the Triad and the tools they put in our hands."
Yvette smiled at the monk before putting the packet back inside her tunic.
"Shall we go?"
"Where is it?" Liam asked.
"Not far from the trail that was used to bring the wagon up here."
"That's what you were looking for a few minutes ago," Teska said. "You haven't used this entrance in a long time, have you?"
"Secret passages only stay secret if they're never used," the monk replied. "When I became one of the senior monks, the abbot sent me into the tunnels with Brother Pharaoh as a guide, and I spent a week memorizing the route. However, the assumption was that I would be leading people out of the abbey, not into it, so it may take me a little time to find the entrance from this side."
"Well, let's break the news to the Blessed and get started," Teska said, walking back to the wagon. All five of them took the change in plans with some trepidation, having spent too long in fear of the monks to be comfortable retreating into the abbey itself, but they had no illusions about the treatment they would receive from Kalisandra, and so each of them swore the oath to keep their silence. Barza, Drienne, and Harlan were the most curious and willing to trust the monks. Claude shrugged and went along without complaint, but shy Gwynin tried to ignore them all. Huddled in a corner of the wagon next to Molly, her hair hiding her face, it was only through Drienne's gentle but firm insistence that she finally made an audible oath.
"Let us go then," Hallam said, climbing onto one of the horses. "We will proceed to the trail Liam spoke of."
Liam and Teska each took one of the remaining horses, while Yvette, the monks, and the Blessed now piled into the wagon, Barza holding the reins. The wagon rolled out of the grove, bumping over branches and rocks. then picked up speed once it was on the flat grassland. Liam and Teska held back, looking toward the farm and the abbey beyond.
"They've seen us," Teska said, watching a sudden flurry of movement atop the gatehouse.
A moment later, they heard a horn sounding, a call with three long blasts. Shortly after that, he saw a flag, a long strip of red cloth tied to a pole, which waved and dipped in a short pattern.
Another signal.
"Aye," Liam said, squinting. "The call was an alert to be ready for new orders. The flag's too far off to read clear, but it's certain to do with us."
"Well, let's give Kalisandra what she expects to see," Teska said, wheeling his horse around to follow the wagon.
Barza kept the horses to a fast walk to reduce the risk of mishap. The ground was flat, but it was not a road, and the grass was thick enough to conceal a hole or a large rock that might cost them a wagon wheel or even a horse if they came upon it too quickly. There was no need to rush. They were moving at least as fast as a man could jog, and they had a big lead on any pursuit Kalisandra might send after them. This pace also gave Kalisandra plenty of time to observe them, perhaps even see that Molly and Liam were in their ranks.
"I wonder what she'll make of that," Teska thought with a grim smile.
The edge of the plateau drew closer, the green line of treetops beyond it growing wider as they approached. Teska glanced back, noting the line of figures marching after them, slowly growing smaller as they fell further behind.
"They're still coming," he said to Liam.
"Hounds driving the game," Liam said. "Can't catch us, but they're not meant to."
"No, they're just keeping us from turning around and trying something else. As far as they know, we're making a break for the trail, and they'll want us to stick to that plan. I'm happy to oblige them."
Liam grinned, the expression twisted by the long scar down the side of his face.
"So," the acolyte began, "your real name's Tasker, is it?"
"It's Teska. Teska Sicarius."
"And you're Sabrian?"
"Sabrian by name, Terrandon by blood and birth. It's a long story."
"And Sophie?"
"Yvette Laveau. And she's not Malakin, she's Hisvetian."
"Yvette," Liam said, practicing the name. "Suits her better, I think."
They rode in silence for another minute before Liam spoke again.
"So, you two aren't married, then?"
Kalisandra lowered the telescope and handed it back to the pilgrim standing next to her atop the gatehouse.
"Sane enough."
The pilgrim made an awkward salute as she started for the stairs.
"Blow the horn if you see them change direction," she called back, "or if you see anyone else out there who's not one of us."
There was a cluster of pilgrims one floor below the roof, unpacking and assembling the last of the stored crossbows.
"As you were," she said absently as they scrambled to their feet. "Get those weapons into the hands of those that can use them. Former soldiers or hunters are best."
Donal was waiting where she'd left him outside the gatehouse, silently watching the pilgrims at work throughout Lowgate.
"Water supply?" she asked as he snapped off a salute.
"There was water running to the greenhouses," her lieutenant reported. "Gone dry already. Found several tubs of earth in there, though. Knocked the dirt out of them and had Danis haul them out to the well. Getting what he can from there, he is, but the level's dropping fast."
Kalisandra nodded.
"Good work, lieutenant. We've thirsty work ahead, and dirty water's better than none."
She set off for the stable, Donal automatically falling in a half-step behind on her left. Then, with an awkward shuffle, he cut across to take position on her right.
"Sorry, mum."
"No apologies," Kalisandra said over her shoulder. "They're the ones killed Angus, not you. Right flank's your place now, and you're ready for it."
"Thank you, mum. See them out there?"
"Aye," Kalisandra replied. "Spies wearing Angus's sword as his own, damn him."
She paused, taking a deep breath.
"Taken Molly as well, they have. Looks unconscious. Saw her lying in the back of the wagon."
She turned back as Donal stopped short, meeting the lieutenant's shocked expression with a grim nod.
"Wouldn't do that if they didn't plan on keeping her alive."
"Aye, mum, but why'd they go after Molly? Liam was there to guard—"
"Treason," his commander interrupted. "Liam's one of them. Aye, riding a horse alongside the spy he is. Warrant that was part of their plan all along.
Wait for our backs to turn, then kill Angus and steal my daughter all at once.
She put a hand on her lieutenant's arm as he began to unbuckle his sword belt.
No time for penance now, Donal. Liam was part of your squad, aye, but the decision to leave him to watch Molly was mine. He fooled us all.
Abashed, Donal nodded and secured his belt.
Taking the wagon toward the game trail they have. Fastest they could take that back to the main road is, what, 2 hours, you'd say?
Aye, Mum, Donal replied. Can't do it any faster than that. There's parts of the trail barely wide enough for the wagon to squeeze through. Rush that and you'll get stuck. We'll be waiting for them on the road where the trail comes out. Wave enough crossbows to give them a warm welcome.
She frowned and lowered her voice.
Not trusting crossbows in the hands of this lot. Not while Molly's a hostage. I want them alive, Donal. All of them. Without a trial, we'll not learn how deep this corruption goes.
She paused, then turned toward the slope, looking up at the wall protecting Midgate. Her practiced eye ran across its length, counting the defenders, then gauged its height.
Very well, Mum, Donal replied. We've more than enough here to take them alive. I'll start putting a good squad together.
Kelisandra continued to study the wall for a moment.
No, she decided at last.
Donal paused.
Mum?
Liam's with them, Donal. He knows where that trail comes out sure as we do. Knows we'll send a squad down the road to cut them off, he does. But that divides our force. Every man follows you now is one less to throw at the gate later, and every man counts for that.
But they've got Molly, Donal said, thunderstruck. You'll let them get away?
They're not going anywhere, she declared, pointing up at the wall. The elf, Donal, trapped behind the wall she is, while her pawns are out there. They'll not leave her. Running about to distract us, that's all. Like as not, that's why they took Molly as well. Divert our purpose. Divide our strength. Trust the sun for another chance at them.
Donal nodded, discipline overcoming doubt.
As you say, Mum. Orders?
Double the watch on the wall. Look for any sign of them circling back this way. And send a runner out to Timon. He's to follow so long as they stay on the plateau. But once they take the trail down into the trees, he's to get back here, double quick. Need him and his squad soon enough, we will.
Donal snapped off a salute.
Where will you be when I'm done, Mum?
The stable. Want to supervise them taking the roof.
She broke off as Rorik ran up to them at a trot.
Mum, he said in a low voice as he stepped in close, saluting. Found him, we did.
Kelisandra's mouth quirked into a tight smile.
Indeed.
Aye, Mum. Got him in the registry now, we have. Out of sight, as you wished.
Very good, Rorik. On my way.
She turned back to Donal as the acolyte saluted again and ran off.
Meet me at the stable when you're done.
She returned her lieutenant's salute, then headed for the registry herself. The tables and shelves were gone, smashed to kindling and burned with the logbooks. Rorik and 5 of the pilgrims were there awaiting her in the now empty space, surrounding another man kneeling on the ground. He was dressed as they were, but his hands were tied and had a sack over his head. All of them showed signs of struggle, fresh bruises and scratches on their arms and faces.
Where'd you find him?
Edge of camp, Mum, Rorik replied. Looked to be gathering what supplies he could to run for my poor. Had a few others with him, he did, including one of the blessed, Bela. Her husband took offense when he learned she and the others were damned for conspiring with the elf. Tried to stop us taking this one.
He put a hand on the hilt of his sword. Kelisandra nodded.
Still a few out there who've been taken in by their lies. They'll be handled after the abbey's taken. Need their labor more than their confessions right now.
She looked at the pilgrim standing with Rorik.
You'll not speak of this to anyone.
All 5 of them saluted her, and she dismissed them with a nod. Kelisandra looked down at the man kneeling before her and motioned for Rorik to take the sack off the man's head.
Quotes from the holy book once fell from your lips like leaves in autumn. Nothing to say now, Father Reborn? Or would you prefer the other name I've heard for you? Sidois.
Sidois slowly raised his head to stare at her through his right eye, his left already swollen shut. Blood oozed from his bruised lips as he made a rueful, coughing laugh, weakly spitting a mouthful of blood in her direction, which she easily avoided. He glanced around him, taking in his surroundings before returning his attention to her.
"The other two, your so-called daughter and son, what are their plans?" Kelisandra demanded. "Where are they taking my daughter?"
Long seconds ticked by.
"Silence won't save you," she warned, "or them."
Still, the man said nothing, his lips slowly curling in a mirthless smile.
"You've no idea the pain ahead of you. Bad enough you're enthralled to an elf, turning the faithful to heresy, but taking my daughter."
Her fist flew into his jaw, whipping his head around and sending him sprawling to the floor.
"No doubt the elf thinks to stay my hand. Trade Molly's life for her own," Kelisandra snarled, kicking him in the ribs. "Won't work. Duty's clear, it is. The elf will burn, as will all those touched by her magic."
She stepped away, composing herself as Rorik hauled Sidwa back up to a sitting position.
"See by your missing fingers, you're not one of them who's been healed," she said, turning back to him. "Not yet. Still a chance for you." "Aye," she added, seeing a reaction cross his face, "even for the likes of you, pirate. Show me a faster way into the abbey, one of the elf's weaknesses, or tell me where they're taking Molly. Won't be forgotten at your trial. Get the blade instead of the fire, you will. A quick death. Or perhaps a lifetime's penance instead, given testimony, sharing what you know of elves with those who hunt them. All depends on what you tell me and how useful it is. But hold your tongue, and you're as damned as the blessed."
Sidwa closed his good eye and started to take a rasping breath, then broke off into a slow, steady cough. For a moment, she feared Rorik and the others had hurt him too badly, that he was about to die on the spot. Then she realized that the pirate wasn't coughing. He was laughing.
"They did not take your daughter," he chuckled, lips parting to reveal bloody teeth. "She ran to them."
"What?" she hissed.
"Saw her myself,"
the Malakan cackled, his voice getting stronger.
"After the riot, she came out of the farmhouse and ran to the barn. No crutches, no limp."
His right eye came open, his gaze boring into Kelisandra's.
"Pretty legs,"
he added with a leer. His laugh paused for a moment as Kelisandra slapped him across the face, but resumed a moment later.
"Lying,"
she pronounced, her gray eyes flashing with rage.
"Why lie when the truth hurts so much more? No, Commander, your daughter has not needed those crutches for some time. Praise be to the Triad, she has been healed."
His laughter rose to a shout.
"She is one of the blessed. Tell me, woman, will you offer her the blade as you did me? Or will you put her into the fire as an example?"
He grunted, curling around her outstretched arm as her dagger plunged into his belly.
"Still prefer the blade to the flame," she whispered in his ear. "See if that changes, we will, as the pain grows."
She stood up from her crouch, pushing Sidwa to the floor, where he collapsed with a groan, slowly writhing.
"Put one of those five who won't talk to watching him," she ordered Rorik. "Keep him alive, long as possible. When the screaming starts, gag him."
Rorik looked pale, but snapped off a salute as she left the room. The abbot sighed as he peered down at Kelisandra through a telescope.
"She's come out of the registry alone. Whoever that poor fellow is, he's still in there."
"Do you think it was Hollum?" asked Brother Lazam, "or one of our other brethren, perhaps?"
"I don't think so. He was dressed as a pilgrim. Some internal dispute in her ranks, perhaps?"
Banbrook shrugged and turned away from the wall to address three of the four monks atop Midgate with him.
"Still no sign of Brother Pharaoh?"
"No," Sister Arvin replied. "He was last seen in the infirmary."
Brother Lazam made a disgusted sound.
"Another one of his mysterious absences."
Banbrook frowned. Pharaoh's eccentricities were common knowledge among the senior staff and considered generally harmless, but failing to appear during a time of crisis such as this was a serious matter.
"He'll be along presently, I'm sure. I'll speak to him about it."
Then he paused. Hadn't he already done that, more than once over the years? He tried to remember, but the harder he concentrated, the faster his mind slid away from the topic, until it was no longer of any importance. The last monk on the roof stood a distance away from them, leaning against one of the merlons and intently studying Lowgate through another telescope. He lifted his head.
"Father?"
"Yes, Brother Albert.
There has been a good deal of activity around the stable, sir, and I believe I now understand their intentions. If you would direct your attention there, please."
Banbrook complied.
"My word," he exclaimed, "they're taking off the roof, and all in one piece, it seems. How are they managing that?"
"Using the tools left behind in the carpentry and the smithy, father," Albert replied. "Many of the pilgrims were common folk, farmers and laborers. With the right tools, such a thing would be little trouble for them."
Brother Lazam, resentful that there were not enough telescopes for him to have one as well, squinted down at the activity.
"They look like a swarm of ants," he chuckled. "Did I ever mention the time I was searching through a jungle on Hisvet, looking for a rare species of finch? I stood too long over a nest of ants, vicious things with jaws near half an inch long. Didn't notice them until they were all over me, biting through my—"
"Another time, brother, if you please," the abbot interjected, turning back to Albert.
The younger monk had the sharpest eyes of anyone in their community, save perhaps Brother Hallam, and also one of the sharpest minds, quick to grasp new ideas.
"So they are taking the roof off of the stable. Why? Surely not to build a shelter for their infirm."
"No, father," said Albert. "If you look closely, you can see what else they're doing."
The abbot looked at the pilgrims for a few moments, then lowered his telescope.
"They are pulling up the support posts."
"Yes, father. With only a roof and support posts, the stable is the easiest structure in Lowgate to disassemble. I believe that's why Calisandra chose it."
"Chose it for what?" Lazam demanded.
"To build siege equipment," the monk replied. "She's going to use one of the support posts as a ram and use the stable's roof as a shield."
Lazam scoffed.
"Not a very strong shield. That roof won't stop a crossbow bolt."
"It could be enough to turn a killing shot into a wounding one," Brother Albert replied. "But more importantly, with a barrier between us and our targets, we'll be shooting blind, wasting ammunition. And there are few enough crossbows among us that we must make every shot count."
"Which gives her more time to keep that ram pounding against the gate," said the abbot. "This will be a closer fight than I thought."
"That's not all she's doing, father," Brother Albert said. "They're also pulling apart the paddocks and using those timbers to make ladders to scale the wall in other places."
"Ladders?"
the abbot asked, raising his telescope to see for himself. The idea sounded ludicrous to him. Midgate's walls were higher than any single length of wood to be found in Lowgate. But as he watched, he could see Calisandra and one of her acolytes among the pilgrims, showing them how to fix the beams together with nails and rope, stabilizing the joints and extending the lengths past the wall's height. Other pilgrims were sawing smaller boards into short lengths and stacking them up. Rungs, the abbot realized, thinking back to Calisandra's earlier words.
"Taken over a dozen fortresses I have. One more's no trouble."
"At this rate, it will be no trouble," the abbot muttered,
seeing now Calisandra's full plan.
"Father?" Sister Arvin asked.
"What defenses we have might be enough to stop the ram," the abbot said. "But to do that, we must concentrate all our defense at the gate, leaving the rest of the wall undefended. So she will send up the ladders, forcing us to spread our defense out. If she takes the wall in any location, Midgate is lost."
He could not help but admire her genius, even as he quailed at the uses she was putting it to. His words had started an argument among his monks. Lazam was proposing a complete evacuation, to escape the abbey through the caves, carrying whatever books they could take with them, while Sister Arvin was insisting that they stay and fight.
Enough, the abbot snapped, his voice crackling with more authority than he usually exerted. It seems clear that Kelisandra will seize Midgate unless we craft a new defense to counter her strategy. Trust in the calling we share that we shall do so. To that end, there shall be no further talk of retreat. Is that clear? This is a problem no different than any other we have faced. Open your minds to the Father's wisdom, brethren. Let him guide your thoughts to new ideas and share them. Let no idea remain unspoken.
The other monks fell silent, closing their eyes. A short time later, Sister Arvin spoke.
We should enlist the scholars to join us upon the wall. That will be another 37 defenders. We are still outnumbered, but we will not be spread so thin.
More hands, but no more weapons to put into them, Lazam replied, taking the role of the stubborn friend, pointing out an error in her position. All the remaining crossbows have been distributed.
Yes, Arvin countered, but on the wall, the most important thing is to push the ladders away before any of the pilgrims reach the top.
Clarification, said another monk, Sister Vala. I submit that the most important thing is to keep the ladders from reaching the wall. Pushing them away is only one manner that might be attempted. Another option is to find a means of destroying or disabling the ladders, so they cannot be used again.
Very good, said the abbot. I think Arvin's suggestion of enlisting our guests is one that we all find unpleasant, but preferable to the alternative, and devising a means of keeping the ladders from reaching the wall is an idea that we must explore more fully. But we must also deal with the ram. Even if we train every crossbow we have upon it, with that roof protecting the men beneath it, I doubt we will slow her progress significantly, especially with her troops shooting crossbows back at us.
What about fire? Lazam asked. We are collecting all the lamp oil as per the defensive protocols. Drop the lot of it on them, followed by a torch.
Albert cleared his throat.
With all due respect, Brother Lazam, the oil has been refined to burn slow and steady, so even if it sets the roof on fire, it won't destroy it right away, and that won't be nearly as effective a tactic against the la—
He broke off as Brother Tambor came up the stairs, looking tired, his robes wet and smeared with mud. Panting, the master of the Hydra Works stepped up to the abbot.
Father, the river is diverted. The only water those outside have is whatever they've already collected. As for us, I've sent some of my assistants to arranging a system of pumps and buckets straight away.
Very well, the abbot said.
Then he froze. A thrill coursed through him as the idea burst into bloom, followed by a wave of horrified guilt as he followed the idea to its conclusion.
Father, give me strength, he prayed silently, to remain true to your calling, to follow the path both when it is easy and when it is difficult. Tamba, wait, he called out, halting the monk's departure. Bring that equipment here instead, along with every length of hose you can find.
Tambor stared at him.
Father?
The abbot nodded with a sad smile.
Quickly, brother, every pump, every bucket, every hose.
Tambor made no other comment, but nodded hastily and retreated back down the stairs. Lazam opened his mouth to ask a question, but the abbot held up a hand for silence.
A moment more, my brethren, if you please. Are any of you familiar with the work of Rashi Hazmin?
As he expected, it was Brother Albert who answered first.
Hazmin, the young monk breathed, his eyes going wide. You want to recreate? Oh, using the lamp oil as a base?
The abbot nodded.
Can it be done?
Albert bit his lip, eyes darting back and forth as he considered it.
Perhaps it would not be precisely the same, but something similar?
He sighed.
But, Father, I only know of Hazmin's work from secondary sources. There is no copy of his formula here.
He broke off as the abbot took a key from around his neck and handed it to Sister Arvin, who accepted it with some apprehension.
Sister, take Brother Albert down to the restricted section. I believe the volume he needs is on shelf 12. Then go with him to the alchemy stalls. Take anything you might need.
As they hurried off, Banbrook looked at the still confused Brother Lazam. Pumps can be used for more things than water.
This work is copywritten 2013 and has been written and recorded by John Maher. If you'd like to learn more about the Freeze, get yourself a bit of swag, or comment on this episode, please visit talesoftheleftand.com, where you can also find a link to our official Facebook page, and if you'd like, make a donation to help keep this series going. Thanks for listening.